Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So first we'd like to welcome Srila Mahavishnu Swami. So we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, text number 10. Vita, raga, bhaya, krodha, man, maya, mam, upashrita, bhava, jnana, tapasa, bhuta, madbhavam, agata. Vita raga bhaya krodha, manmaya mamupashita, bhava jnana tapasa, bhuta madbhavam agata. Vita freed from raga attachment, bhaya fear, krodha and anger, matmaya fully in me, mam in me, upashita being fully situated, bhava many, jnana of knowledge, tapasa by the penance, bhuta being purified, madbhavam transcendental love for me, agata attained. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Being freed from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. Purport. As described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge, and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance, and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep the same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the supreme to be impersonal. And because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again, and so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean, which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence obtainable with that individual personality. This is a kind of fearful stage of life devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all. Being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. Such people are too materially attached. Some people are too materially attached, and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause, and because of that, and some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world: negligence of spiritual life, fear of a spiritual personal identity, and the conception of void that arises from frustration life. To get free from these three stages of material concept of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulated principles of devotional life. The last stage of devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental love of Godhead. According to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the science of devotional service, adau shara tata saru sanga ta vajna kriya tato narta navritti sya tato nishtaruchi stata ata sakti stato bhavas tata prema yadanshati sadakanama yam premna pradurbhave bhavat krama. In the beginning, one must have a preliminary desire for self-realization. This will bring one to the stage of trying to associate with persons who are spiritually elevated. In the next stage, one becomes initiated by an elevated spiritual master, and under his instruction, the neophyte devotee begins the process of devotional service. By execution of devotional service, under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes free from all material attachment, attains steadiness and self-realization, and acquires a taste for hearing about the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. This taste leads one further forward to attachment for Krishna consciousness, which is matured in bhava, or the preliminary stage of transcendental love of God. Real love for God is called prema, the highest perfectional stage of life. In the prema stage, there is constant engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So by the slow process of devotional service, under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, one can obtain the highest stage, being freed from all material attachment, from the fearfulness of one's individual spiritual personality, and from the frustrations that result in void philosophy. Then one can ultimately attain to the abode of the Supreme Lord. Vitaragabhaya krodha manmayamamupashitya bahavo gana tapasa puta madbhavam agata. Being free from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. Namo Vishnu Vidaya, Krishna Pristaya Bhutai, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Saraswatam Deve, Gauravani Pacharane, Nirvisesa Shunyavadi Paskatya De Sitarane. Again in this verse, Lord Sri Krishna, he's explaining the science of devotional service and how one progresses to the perfectional stage of life. And here in the purport, Prabhupada is emphasizing that one has to become free from certain mistaken conceptions of life, which are caused primarily by one's attachment to these certain modes of material nature. So here it explains that those who are very attached to the material energy, who are in the gross bodily conception of life, they cannot understand how the Supreme can have a spiritual body. This is called Atmanam Manyate Jagat. That whatever is my situation, I imagine that no one can have a better situation than me. The old frog in the well story, how the frog was in the well, and he thought everything here is in the well with me. There can't be anything better than my well. But somehow or another, one of his neighbors happened to see something beyond the well, namely the Atlantic Ocean, and was trying to describe to his neighbor frog about how great the Atlantic Ocean was. But the frog refused to accept that the Atlantic Ocean could be too much bigger than his well, if at all. And as Prabhupada said, he puffed himself up and puffed himself up, trying to ask him, is the Atlantic Ocean this big or is it this big? And finally he burst. And so in the same way, those who are in a gross bodily conception of life, when they hear about the Supreme, they think, well, maybe he lifted Govardhana Hill. But after all, he must have practiced weightlifting for a long time, and there are many people who lift weights, and perhaps after some time, others will be able to lift Govardhana Hill too. So they hear about this, but they minimize it. Just like King Kamsa, due to his envy, he heard about Krishna, but he said, who is this cowherd boy? So he's lifted one pebble known as Govardhana Hill. So he's defeated one harmless water snake, Kaliya Serpent. But what is more wonderful is that you're claiming that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was talking to Akura. So even you do something wonderful, if you're in the wrong conception of life, even if someone does something wonderful, someone else seeing it in a narrow conception of life, his own conception of life, he'll think it's insignificant, it's not very important. Who is this Krishna? Kangsu said. But at the next moment, he said, what is his power? But then he had heard that he killed one elephant, Kulyavalpita, gigantic elephant. So then he became a little nervous. And he said, well, maybe he can't be an ordinary cowherd boy. Maybe I should go and surrender to him. But how can a great warrior like me surrender to a cowherd boy? And the next moment he heard that this cowherd boy had killed Mushtika and Chanura, big, big wrestlers. So he thought, well, maybe I should go out and inflict pains upon the residents of Vrindavan. But I can't do that because my heart is palpitating out of fear of this boy. So, here it explains, even if one is not as demoniac as Kangsa, but practically speaking, most people in a very gross conception of life. Prabhupada said one time, it'll take people 500 years, people in general, before they can understand that they're not this body. Even you explain how the body is changing and how the self within the body, the personality, the person within the body, the person who's aware, he's always the same, and people cannot understand. They say, well, I am changing. So this is due to very great absorption in the mode of ignorance. Practically speaking, ignorance is the predominant mode of nature in the material world, and most people, especially in Kali Yuga, are completely absorbed in the mode of ignorance, and they have no perception, they have no idea of anything beyond them. I am this body. Their ethic is, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, is that if you work hard, you're a good person. That's what counts. These are the people who walk by when you're distributing books and go, hey man, why don't you get a job? Get a job? What kind of work do you do, sir? Well, I work in a munitions factory. I do good for mankind. I make bullets and bombs. Defense department. Why don't you get a job? You can help humanity too. So this is gross material conception. So when they hear that the Supreme is a person, they automatically reject. How can he be a person? He must be like me. So even they have religions where they have God, he has no face. He's a big, as we said the other day, that there's so many speculations in so many religions, but that one minister, Baptist minister, has said that God is so great that you can't see him because you can't get far enough away from him to be able to see him. He's so big. Others, if you see these tracks, especially these Christians at the airports or in the parking lots, they're always handing out these little tracks. And they always have God. He's always on this big, big throne. And you look at him, he's just like a blank face. So this is their, and someone goes before God and he's shivering and shaking. This is their idea of God. More or less impersonal. That he appears that he has a material body just like we are. Even in the painted God in the Sistine Chapel, he's an old man with a big beard. His hands are trembling, trying to clutch the earth because he has arthritis or whatever, so it's become hard in his old age. One person named Rabbi Hare Krishna, that was his name, Hare Krishna. He wrote one book, it was called Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. And in the book, his explanation is that God is a nice person, but he's kind of lost control. He's not fully in control anymore, so sometimes the devil wins and bad things happen to good people. So this is all ultimately, if you examine it, it's just a material conception of God. That he's just like us, maybe a little bit more powerful, but after all, he has his problems too. You have to put up with God because he's a nice guy, but he just can't get it together anymore. He's so old. And it says that others, they don't even try to appreciate how God might be a person. they're a little beyond material gross conception of life, because after all, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, sattvam chapter 17, text 3. Sattvanurupa sarvasya shara bhavati bharata. Sharamayo yam purusham yo yat sharas eva saha. That a person, he has his conception of life according to what he does. So most people simply eat, they sleep, and they have sex and they defend themselves. So naturally they have a very gross conception of life, because that's all they do. But others, they spend a little time in speculating. Once in a while, the rare person you meet, I don't thank your time, because maybe in Holland it's a little less, but they have some hobby along the side. It's called mental speculation. And they feel themselves very proud of the fact that they're above all the general mass of people, because they know how to speculate. It's the person who has his own theory about life. He always thinks that he should write a book so everyone else can be enlightened with his understanding about life. And generally their conclusion, usually, or 99.99% of the time, they come up with the idea is that they're God. So it's very hard to figure out how you're God in this material world, because here is God. He's just getting kicked around by so many other gods and the material modes of nature are kicking him around. So it's hard to figure out or to justify that we're God around here. Therefore, they come up with the idea is that I may not be God here, but by a little practice, I can become God when I merge into my effulgence. But as I said in the Bhagavad Gita, the fools, they deride me when I descend in this human-like form. But ultimately, when I go back to my original abode, which is just the white light, then everyone will appreciate me, because I'll be the only one there, and I appreciate myself. So this is the merging. This is called so-called jnana, knowledge. Knowledge, at least, that I'm something beyond this gross body, that I have a spiritual personality, but it is limited to the conception that I am the only, the ultimate, I am the Alpha, the Omega, whatever I said in the Bhagavad Gita, that's what I am. Although others may, and now I've come in this rascal, fool incarnation, so people misunderstand me. But I'm actually never manifest to such fools and rascals. They think that I'm something beyond my impersonal form. So here it says, generally they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean, which merge into the ocean. So this is actually the highest perfection of life attainable without individual identity. So it is some kind of elevation, but it's an elevation for the rascals, for those who are fools and rascals, because ultimately one will become frustrated and bored in the Brahma Jyoti and have to come down again as this full incarnation. Therefore, and there are others, they hear about these things, they think they're all fools and rascals. Everyone is, you know, they see the people who are gross materialists and they think they're just like animals. And they see the jnanis and they think they're speculators. And what is their conclusion? Is that ultimately there's nothing. I'm sure 99.9% of the people now, or a good percentage of the people, think like that. That at the end, you're dead. When you're dead and there's nothing else. And it's all void. There is one philosophy known as existentialism. And generally, they come up to the conclusion is that life has no meaning at all. That is their philosophy. There's no meaning, and there's not any meaning in trying to find meaning to life. So their conclusion is the best thing to do, just like their acharya was, I believe it was Camus, who drove his car over a cliff. Mahajano yena katasapanta. So he set the example so others can follow him. And probably he's still preaching his philosophy in a more subtle form, in a more subtle way. And encouraging others to follow him over the cliff so they can spread their movement that there is no meaning. So these things are all disease conditions of life. They're caused by the modes of ignorance predominantly, and there's a little impassion infused within these theories. According to Bhagavad Gita, those who have a gross conception of life, they're in the mode of ignorance. And those who can speculate, they're more in the mode of passion. And those who are avoidous, they're in the deepest modes of ignorance. So, it is not that it is simply some others. There are others who have these conceptions, but we've been trained up with these conceptions since we were born. As soon as we were born, immediately our parents looked at the body and they said, "Oh, look at that. He's so cute, isn't he? He looks like you, doesn't he? Oh, Google, Google." I said, "Yeah, that's right. I'm the center. Worship me. Yeah, what a beautiful body." You grow up, your mother says, "Oh, you're so handsome," or "You're so beautiful." And everyone is telling you about your body, how nice your body looks, how attractive it is, how you should make it more attractive, decorate it, get a little prestige, make money for it, etc. So people grow up, they're trained up since birth in the gross conception of life, and sometimes they're encouraged to speculate a little, be a little creative. And most people are, nowadays, they're told that that religion is all right if you want to believe in it, but don't take it too seriously because, after all, at the end, there's nothing. So they had one beer commercial in America. I personally didn't see it, but I heard about it. They said that you better get all the gusto you can because you only go once around. In other words, that is the modern philosophy in general. Chintyam aparayam cha pralayantam upashitya. They believe that to gratify the senses unto the end of life is the prime necessity of human civilization. That's more or less the motto. If it feels good, then you just do it. Whereas Chavarka Muni said, beg, borrow, and steal, but somehow or another get ghee and eat it. So, of course, people, they don't know the value of ghee, so they beg, borrow, and steal, and they eat all kinds of other things, which are not so as pleasant as ghee. But the idea is the same, because at the end, there is nothing. It is all void. So this is the basic, this is a very big frustration in life. Everyone is frustrated because they think that whatever I'm doing, it has no meaning. At the end, it's all zero, and I just become zero, and all my work becomes zero, and it's all zero. So this is a big frustration for people. So they try to imagine some meaning in life called religion. This is what they say. And that keeps people happy and contented while they're here. They think that perhaps there's something beyond this nothingness. But if you were really strong, if you didn't need so many clutches, then you would simply accept that there is nothing, and you'd simply take the natural course and kill yourself. But because you're weak and not very capable, therefore you have to seek after some meaning in life, some other reality, other than what is real, what is actually real, which is just gross sense gratification. So, even if you better to become a man and grow up, or a woman, and just get into your senses. Because that's really reality. Why do you need these clutches like religion? Just enjoy as much as you can, and when you die, that's it. But at least you got some enjoyment in between. So these are the modern theories, and we've been more or less trained up in this way. And therefore it's very difficult to take seriously Krishna consciousness. Which means that one has to deny, which is, they always make propaganda, they deny the necessities of life. They even sleep on the floor sometimes. I remember in Dallas when I was in Texas, they had one movie on the devotees, and they showed the children. And they said they even eat on wax paper, right on the floor, just like a dog. And one deprogrammer named Ted Patrick was saying, they eat off of wax paper. They won't even give him a bowl. He said, I treat my dog better than they treat their children. At least I give my dog a bowl to you. And they make him take cold showers. They get him up early in the morning. So this is people think, oh, how horrible. They're denying the body. The only thing these poor children have, the only people thing that these people have, their body, they're denying it. So people think this is abominable, this is horrible. This is the only thing you have in life. Something to eat and some sex life. They're actually denying these things. And yet, we have to preach like that this is actual, this is not the purpose of life, that this is not what we're here for, and that we have to gradually eliminate these things. The very thing that people are trying to cultivate and increase, that we've been trained up, go to school and get a good job, because if you don't make money, you won't be able to eat and sleep. Oh no, I better work harder. Study all these scientific theories about how atoms were created and where the universe comes from. Because after all, if I don't do that, I won't be able to eat and sleep. So this is a great conflict when one comes to Krishna consciousness. It's sometimes people try to make a leap of faith and they start starving themselves or they don't sleep anymore. And then they flip out, so to speak, and they go completely to the other end. But our process is not to deny the body, but to utilize the body in Krishna's service by taking prasadam and sleeping what's necessary. Yuktahara viharasya yukta chetasa karmasu yukta svatna sabodasya yogo bhavati dukkha. Yukta, what is necessary, but at the same time to understand that cultivating sense gratification is not the purpose of life. The purpose of life is, as it says in that song Parama Karuna, is that Vaja Vaja Vai Chaitanya Nitai Sudrida Vishvasakori Vishayi Charya Serase Majiya Muke Bolo Harivar. That one should simply regulate the sense gratification and spend his time chanting the name of Krishna. Try to absorb the mind in Krishna consciousness. But one has to see that these three conceptions of life, this gross conception of life, leads to negligence of spiritual life. For instance, if you meet someone on the street, very often they'll say, no time. No time. No time, because their whole time is spent in trying to figure out, they're running here and there simply looking for money. Money, money, sweeter than honey. The merchant, the professional thief, and the professional soldier, they'll risk their very dear lives to get money. So everyone is, the big profession nowadays is to be somehow or another a merchant. The doctors, they're merchants. They're not really doctors, they're simply merchants. They're trying to sell you on some kind of pill or some kind of machine or some kind of treatment so they can make money. Everyone is simply interested in money. Except for a few strange, weird people who have some other philosophy or ideas. But generally speaking, most people are simply interested in making money. And therefore, they have no time for spiritual life because it doesn't make any money. As a matter of fact, they make propaganda that if you go and join some spiritual organization, they'll fleece you of all your money. And if you join the Hare Krishnas, your hair will fall out too. You will be left with nothing. They'll take everything you have and give you a bed sheet to wear. They'll even take your hair away and use it for wigs so that people go out and collect. So this is their propaganda. That there's really no time except for making money, and therefore they have no time for spiritual life. And the others have fear of a spiritual personality. They think, I've been to so many groups, I've met with so many people, and at the end I was always cheated. Of course, I was always trying to cheat everyone else too, but somehow or another, ultimately I always got cheated myself. So they're fearful because they know Everyone is a cheater or being cheated. So I'm always trying to cheat everyone. They're trying to cheat me. So I hope it doesn't go on in the spiritual world. I hope things are a little bit more peaceful there. So therefore, they're fearful that a spiritual life, I get a spiritual body, and we just wind up trying to cheat each other up there. It'll be a drag. So better just to merge and end spiritual identity, to end any kind of identity, and then everything will be very peaceful. And others, they say it's all nonsense. There is nothing. Just grow up and accept it. So one has to get rid of these three stages of material conception of life, and then he can actually turn his attention to Krishna in the process that Krishna is giving. It is not simply we're trying to deny it, that we should spend all our time thinking, yes, there is no void, or we should practice spiritual life, or we shouldn't be so fearful. It is not simply some psychological process to overcome our fears and our reluctance to perform activities or our frustrations in life. It is a positive practice by hearing and chanting about Krishna. But because we have these misconceptions, we don't take up hearing and chanting. We dwell on the lower conceptions of life. But if we take up the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna in the proper way, under the proper guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, the result is that all these conceptions will disappear as we learn how to intimately associate with Krishna through this process. That as soon as one comes to associate with Krishna more and more intimately, tesham satatam yuktanam bhajantam pritipurvakam, as one becomes more determined, for instance, if one goes out on book distribution, which is a good example, book distribution forces one, under the circumstances, to sink or to swim. One can't start looking around on Sankirtan at all the billboards, all the lights, look at all the men or women passing by and speculate, and because then immediately one will sink into the modes of material nature and drown. Therefore, Sankirtan, in order to keep aloof from the modes of material nature under such circumstances, one has to learn to become more and more determined to absorb himself in the process of devotional service to Krishna. One has to learn how to relate with others in such a way as to enthuse them, which is more or less the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. That is, we want to enthuse people to take to the process of Krishna consciousness, especially by getting one of Srila Prabhupada's books. So it means that one is consistently, for many hours during the day, engaged in Krishna service, and a service that that more or less forces one to keep himself above the modes of nature. To keep himself constantly engaged in the service, and one can see, one gets feedback that the more enthusiastically, the more lovingly he does the service, the more confident he does the service, the more patiently he does it, the more his Krishna reciprocates and gives him the potency and makes the arrangements by which Krishna becomes revealed within that service. So it is a very special service, in the sense that it keeps one constantly absorbed in Krishna consciousness and increases one's feelings for that service and for Krishna. And therefore, one naturally becomes enthusiastic about the process of Krishna consciousness. And that is automatically, for instance, one will go out generally on Sankirtan, and in the beginning he'll be a little nervous and fearful. Everyone will look like they're 10 feet higher than they actually are. Most people look like if I say something to this person, he'll probably jump on me and devour me right in the middle of the street, punch me out. And therefore, in the beginning, we may say, excuse me, get out of my way, you no good. I knew it. It was just too difficult to do this service. The people are too demoniac here. And get out of my way, you know, you're interfering with my sense gratification, you just took 3 seconds of my time. Time is money. Money is sense gratification. Yeah, boy, I'm actually interfering with people's lives and preventing them from fulfilling their desires. I don't know what I'm doing here. But after some time, if one stays patiently, then one gets a little confident. You know, and you go, sir, excuse me, yes, what can I do for you? What do you want? Take one of these books, yes. What am I supposed to do? You know, what am I supposed to do with it? You're supposed to read it, that's what it is. Anything else? Yeah, give a donation. All right, how much? Wow, I'm really potent today. Everyone is under my control out there. So you will try to get, sir, yes, sir. So one will automatically, by practice, one becomes free from fear. He starts seeing that it's actually Krishna is control here. And he sees that spiritual life is actually very nice. It wasn't so terrible. Sankirtan was not such a fearful thing. And it wasn't so horrible getting out here, although it may be a little cold sometimes, or maybe a lot of smoke in the air in the airports. But still, it's nice being engaged in the service, although there may be some material drawbacks to it. And then, when one becomes more and more enlivened, he'll see that actually this philosophy is true. That the ultimate cause behind everything is not the void, but Krishna's action control out here. That he's controlling who's approaching me, he's controlling me, he's controlling them. If I just surrender, then Krishna takes more and more control of the situation, and everything becomes very blissful. So, if one becomes absorbed in Krishna's service, then the result is that these conceptions of life automatically go away. But one has to recognize them, otherwise one may take these conceptions of life as devotional service. One may take the weeds for the plant. One may think, oh, it's good to be a little in anxiety. And it may be. Or it may be good to... Sometimes people think, I am so humble. I am the humblest. I am so humble, I don't even deserve to do devotional service. I am so rotten and fallen that I don't even deserve the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So better I get the mercy of sense gratification, because that's all I deserve. I deserve to be in Maya because of all my rotten, fallen nature. So sometimes people may take some material idea and think it's part of the devotional service. So one has to be able to recognize these conceptions of life, and then one can actually reject them by not paying so much attention to them, instead paying more attention to the positive service of Krishna. Because whether it's book distribution or service in the temple, anyone who's been a pujari knows that if he's actually serious about being a pujari, he doesn't have any time. Or even if one is cooking in the kitchen, I remember I used to be a head cook, and even as I used to cook sometimes, even after that. But it's so absorbing that one doesn't even know, if he's very organized and does his cooking very nicely, time goes so rapidly he doesn't even know. Practically speaking, he has to keep on looking at his watch just to make sure he gets everything done for the offering, because time goes so rapidly. So any services can be absorbing if one takes it very seriously. And the result is that if it's Krishna is the object of the service to please Krishna, then the result is that Krishna will reveal himself through that service, and one will become free from these lower conceptions of life. So this is explained here, and the perfection is that one will come to some feeling towards Krishna. This is called the bhava state. That it won't simply be seen as something mechanical service, but one will actually realize that I'm doing this to please Krishna. One will actually see that Krishna is a person, he has a personality, he's controlling things, but not just like a puppeteer. He's giving me my free will, my freedom to love him. That one will realize Krishna and develop some feeling towards him in proportion to one's becoming free from these lower conceptions, which more or less say, Maya is always saying, don't work so hard because he doesn't really exist. They're just putting you on. It's all a nice thought, but don't really take it. A blue boy, come on. Controlling everything. Don't take it seriously. It's all right because, you know, you're not a very strong person. You can't accept the real reality. But, you know, come on. You need a little spice, you know. Sense gratification. And even if you can't enjoy externally, Don't give up me internally in your heart. Don't throw me away, your only real friend. Keep me near and dear. And outside you can be a big, strong person, big, you can put on a profile, but even don't take that too seriously. Because inside you know who's really in control. Me. Maya. So one has to see that Maya will always try to discourage us in so many different ways, keep us locked into material conceptions of life, but one has to become determined enough to reject these conceptions and go on patiently executing devotional service, and gradually Krishna will give one clues, little realizations here and there, which will strengthen our conviction, which will detach us gradually from the material conceptions of life. And one day when we're sufficiently purified of these conceptions of life, one will come to the spontaneous platform by which real feelings and awareness of Krishna will develop, and one will actually come to the platform of prema, or pure Krishna consciousness. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Well, why is it your service to distribute more books? It's Krishna's service. But it was thinking, Krishna, I've been out here for 10 minutes already, no one's taken a book. Why are you wasting my time? Send someone. I'm suffering. Send someone to engage me, and I can become enlivened again and enjoy. So we're thinking like that, then of course we may become, Krishna makes sense. And you know, another 10 minutes has gone by. You know, you're still there. Didn't you hear my prayer? Are you going deaf? You're losing control? I heard about this. I read some book by Hare Krishna about how God is really not so much in control here. So if a person as good as I am, you know, as pure as I am, can't get your mercy, then who can? So these are all very subtle, but the point is that we should try to see, not only just pray, but also try and see things in a Krishna conscious way. We should try to understand what's going on and choose appropriate prayers. Not that I got my, whenever the books don't go out, I have my pat prayer. My automatic prayer that kind of makes everything happen. But we should try and see what's going on. What is my mentality? What is the situation? And then try to pray in a meaningful, feeling way towards Krishna, something appropriate. Use our intelligence a little. And that will be adequate, and then just we have to, it's up to Krishna. And become a little detached from the results. You know, if we feel ourselves becoming a little worried that my reputation's at stake, then we should see that, what is the value of my reputation? It's just putting me in anxiety. I'm not out here for my reputation, you know. And if we're really feeling, you know, I'm trying to save the conditioned souls out here, that's good. Certainly Krishna will reciprocate, but even if he doesn't, then we should realize that I'm not really saving the conditioned souls out here. It's my spiritual master who's engaging me, Krishna is engaging me, and engaging the spirit souls to save us both. I'm not the savior, Krishna is the savior. It's up to him if he engages me or not. So there may be so many different things we have to see in a Krishna conscious way. And then pray. And even if the results don't come, but at least we prayed. At least we're keeping ourselves. Prayer is bandhanam. It's one of the 9 processes. And as you get that done with that, you can try smaranam or kirtanam. But keep yourself, we have to keep ourselves engaged somehow or another. And we have an objective. We want to distribute as many books as possible. But that will happen the more we become purified and the more intelligence Krishna will be able to give us so we can distribute more books. It's not that Krishna, he doesn't want to give us the intelligence, but we have to become worthy of it. Therefore, we have to choose appropriate prayers to develop appropriate mentality by which we become worthy of Krishna's mercy, which will enable us to distribute more books. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, because we train our children up. Don't be in anxiety like I am. Don't think of money all the time. Don't think of money. Don't worry about getting a good education. You may starve, you know, to death. But don't worry about it. Love Krishna somehow or another, although you can't be really too sure that how he's going to help you. There are many examples how he didn't help people, but don't worry about it. Be strong, not like we are. Try and love Krishna, whoever he is. Don't worry about it. Don't think of money all the time. Don't think of money. Don't worry about getting a good education. You may starve, you know, to death. But don't worry about it. Love Krishna somehow or another, although you can't be really too sure that how he's going to help you. There are many examples how he didn't help people, but don't worry about it. Be strong, not like we are. Try and love Krishna, whoever he is. Don't worry about a good education, which is the only real thing in life anyhow. I don't know why my son, I didn't, you know, we tried to tell him to love Krishna, but he didn't listen. Because the parents have a big influence, and generally they tell their children to love Krishna, but they don't really teach them how to do it. Because they themselves are not so sure. Prabhupada, his education, he stressed, was a little math, a little ability to read, and mostly just Krishna. But we don't have any faith. They have to become a doctor or a lawyer or get an education. Or else they'll, you know, all they'll be left with is this cult. They'll be just a member of some cult without any education. Everyone will think they're, what will they do? They may even be forced to go out and distribute books. That may be the only way, the only thing left for them. They'll have to preach. How? It's the last thing that we want our son to do. I mean, officially, of course, everyone should do it. But there's really no future in that. And, you know, who knows, you know? They may even have to clean the temple. How embarrassed. What is your son? My son is a lawyer. He's a devotee lawyer. Once in a while he shows up for class. Wow, no kidding. And he's making a bundle. You know, he even worships deities once every week. But he's secure at least. What does your son do? He's sweeping the floor. Oh God. You mean he took it seriously? Too bad. What is he going to do when everything collapses? I mean, you really have trust in this organization? You really believe that there's a God? So, I mean, although it may be not so obvious, people don't consciously think like that, but there's some implication. Otherwise, why do they stress so much? It's not the children. Most of the children, they don't grow up. They grow up thinking that they want to become a lawyer or a doctor. At the beginning, I remember many of the children in Gurukul, and they saw that when I associated with them, they're always playing, I'm going to become Ram, I'm Ram, and he's, you know, Lakshman. They were playing like that. And when they got in after Gurukul, then they started to think, well, my God, what am I going to do in this movement? And everyone was saying, you know, there's no future, you know, there's no vocation. There's no vocation. What are you supposed to do? Everyone was supposed to train people to become lawyers and doctors in our movement. There is a vocation, the same vocation everyone else has, namely to distribute books, worship the deity, clean the temple. You know, there's already vocations. You don't have to get any other type of training. There's already training. But because the parents don't have faith, therefore the children don't have faith that they can do this for the rest of their life. All right, maybe you can become a book distributor for 5 years, but what do you do after that? What do you do after 10 years? All right, someone may have made it for 10 years, but what do you do? Then what? You're going to sweep the temple room every day? You're going to worship the deities or something? What are you going to do then? They don't even pay people to do that anymore. How are you going to eat and sleep? So because everyone thinks like that, you know, therefore, you know, they have problems. Because if we had so many devotees doing book distribution, if actually the children, all these children who left to get so-called good jobs somewhere, who completely disappeared from Krishna consciousness, if they actually stayed in the movement and went out and distributed books, then it would be very easy to support themselves and everything else in the temple. But because so many devotees have left, being convinced that there's no future like that, therefore it makes it difficult for everyone else who stays. Well, sometimes we're so dedicated to this movement that we forget that the children are part of the movement. And therefore, there may be so many facts, because we're young, and because we haven't been trained up by persons who have experience. First of all, we don't know anyone who's ever had experience trying to make a transition in the way that we're trying to make a transition. But generally in the Veda culture, there were examples, and it was already a structure which made it much easier to train up the previous generation. There was already a varna, and there were even ashrams. Everything was very developed. So we don't have that. So it's not that we should simply say that, you know, we're all a bunch of fools and rascals or dodos, and therefore that's why we made so many mistakes. It was just natural to make so many mistakes. But still, we shouldn't think, well, you know, we have to examine and see that how we can improve things. But not that we should think that I should have been perfect. But it's just the natural outcome of the situation. On the other hand, sometimes it's not only that we are the devotees and materialists, or have a materialistic propensity, and therefore they encourage their children, but sometimes they don't take enough concern with their children, and therefore the children wind up feeling alienated, and therefore they reject what their parents stand for. That may be part of it. So it has to be a balance between caring for the children, which is probably right in the Bhagavad Gita, the wife and the children, they're natural objects of affection. But because we ourselves are not so experienced, therefore it's very difficult to know how to be affectionate and not become exploitive at the same time. So these are factors that one has to learn somewhat through experience and somewhat through learning or training. But the point I'm trying to make is that, at least in that regard, is that someone can be encouraged to remain within Krishna consciousness and take up a vocation within this movement if they are intelligent enough to understand or advance enough so that they can live simply. It's just like we have farms. I remember going to one of our farms and they had so much financial difficulty at this farm. It's supposed to be there. And at the farm, there were maybe 40 householders. And there were 40 cars in the parking lot. And they had 40 different houses that they lived in. And they had 300 cows. So, and they couldn't figure out how to solve their economic problem. Of course, if you told them, why don't you sell a few of your cars, because you're spending most of your money just maintaining them, live a little simply, don't go to India every year. You know, maybe you should, if you're willing to live simply, then it's possible to live self-sufficiently. But if you want to be self-sufficient with your own video, your own car, your own free pass to go to India every year, and everything else that all the karmis have, and do it self-sufficiently, is absurd. So similarly, if we want that the children remain within our movement and be educated in Krishna consciousness, then we actually have to become satisfied with Krishna consciousness. Because this movement can never survive and at the same time have members, everyone being very materially opulent. Because material opulence, a lot of material opulence especially, and Krishna consciousness don't go very well together. And material too much material opulence, especially if it's not directly used in Krishna consciousness in the preaching work or in the temple, because it's not ours. Just like this temple doesn't belong to anyone. So it can be very opulent, so we can't say it's ours. But if personally we want a lot of material opulence and facilities, then it would be very difficult to remain in Krishna consciousness. Of course, the karma education nowadays is not so good either. It's not that generally, at least in America, I know that the standard of education is greatly decreased. But generally when the Gurukul students, they enter into the karma system, they do much better than everyone else because they haven't destroyed their brains by intoxication and sex life yet. But generally they get really absorbed in it once they enter into it. But our educational system is not perfect in Gurukul. For one thing, is because for the many different factors, generally one factor is that if someone can't do anything, then you make him a Gurukul teacher. At least that used to be. He's disqualified for everything else. He can't do Sankirtan anymore, so let him teach Gurukul. Yeah, I mean, it's just a natural... In other words, we're inexperienced. We're inexperienced, and because there are many pressures on the authorities and the administrators to just somehow or another juggle things in such a way as to keep things together, because it's not so easy to maintain the centers we have with the under different circumstances. And therefore, sometimes it was found to be very difficult to find qualified teachers to teach the students. And then there are other factors too. Like many times the Gurukul students, their parents were divorced, or they came from different types of backgrounds, or the parents weren't devotees anymore, or they would go home and parents would just stuff them with sense gratification. So there are other factors too. It's not so easy just to point out one or two factors. But that doesn't mean we should just toss our hands up and say, well, it's impossible. But we can work on it according to our capacity. Oh God, that article. I don't believe everything I read.
You read?
Yeah, I read it. Well, let's say that that was the one about the reunion out in California.
Yeah.
Oh God. Anyhow, I hope they make progress because most of them are quite... their lives are not exactly absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Most of those students. But there's some hope of it. In California. You mean in plus?
But the thing is, if your parents are devotees, then you have a bigger chance to make it.
Well, the thing is that some of them, they've developed very strange understandings of life. Some of them, they believe because they were born in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, they're above the laws of material nature. They've developed some conceptions of life which kind of justify their sense gratification. Therefore, it's sometimes very difficult to convince them that devotional service also means something practical. It means to do practical activities rather than simply call oneself a devotee and dress like a devotee and make excuses how they were mistreated in Gurukul and how this justifies all the sinful activities that they're doing now. So, it may not be all their fault, but unless they recognize that there's some part of it that is their fault, then it's just a waste of time. You may make so many alliances with them, but they're actually not really so much in a position for an alliance. Although that may be good as a tactic, but it seems that their main problem for most of them is that they don't accept anyone as an authority except for their own minds and senses.
So for them,
Yeah, if they make any progress at all. Sense gratification, having illicit sex and taking intoxication is not the way to self-realization. No matter how much you go before the deities and dance and chant like a madman, if you're just having illicit sex and taking intoxication, you're just wasting your time. Although we don't want to discourage anyone from doing that, but at least there has to be some recognition that, you know, that your third marriage was not divine. And the third bunch of children you just created, you know, that wasn't Krishna's arrangement. We're trying to become devotees. Therefore, there may be some problems in between. In other words, although they are somehow or another, they have taken devotee birth, and they are connected with Krishna consciousness, but somehow or another things have become mixed up. Therefore, there has to be some attempt to try and bring them back to Krishna consciousness. But we do have to understand what is Krishna consciousness, so we'll know what to bring them back to. It's not just some sentiment, and then you can do whatever you want. Although we have to be clear on that. And then we can, although that may be the only thing that they can understand, so certain personalities can understand, but that is a tactic, more or less, to encourage them at least to stay in association. And perhaps in the future, some of them will become purified by that. If they get some good association. Yeah, devotional service depends upon our being honest to some extent. But not, we have to know what honesty is. In other words, we can't think that obviously everyone has a cheating propensity because that's why we've come to the material world. We don't want to recognize what our real identity is, and we want to act in some other way. So we have to see what I'm doing wrong, but we can't just spend our whole life trying to see what I'm doing wrong. We have to also see what I'm supposed to do that's right, and try and cultivate that, and be happy if we make a little progress like that. We can't discourage ourselves too much, so we lose our enthusiasm. Look at that, I did that wrong now. Now I did this other thing wrong. I just do so many things wrong. I wonder why I do anything at all. If I stopped doing anything, I wouldn't do anything wrong because I wouldn't do anything. That would be an improvement. We can't be so hard on ourselves that we think, well, I'm just a big cheater and, you know, I actually, everything I do is just for cheating people and I'm cheating myself and cheating Krishna and cheating others and that's not doing anything. That would be a big improvement. We should also be a little satisfied that by the mercy of my spiritual master, by the mercy of the devotees and Krishna, I see something that I'm supposed to do that's right, and I'm doing it. So I'm actually becoming an instrument for Krishna. I'm actually realizing that although I'm doing something right, but it's by the mercy of Krishna and his devotees that I'm able to do it. I'm actually letting him work as I'm actually becoming an instrument and let him use my body and mind, my intelligence in his service. So that's right. That's not cheating. So the extent that we attend the program, to the extent that we do service, that's not cheating. To the extent that we don't do it, then we're cheating ourselves. And we may be cheating others too. But that's not all we're doing. It's just, we're in the Hare Krishna movement, just cheating people, cheating ourselves. We're also doing things that are honest, at least most devotees. Of course, if you came here and, you know, every day secretly you're stealing everyone's Sankirtan collection and hiding in a big hole in the tree in the backyard, waiting for the day you can escape. Well, that may be not so good. But still, even as a story of one thief, he heard that there's one boy in Vrindavan. He's decorated with all kinds of jewels. So he heard about this and he decided to go to Vrindavan and steal all the jewels from this boy. So he went to Vrindavan and he was looking around and he saw this, he was looking for this boy, searching for him so much. And finally Krishna appeared and he said, I want your jewels. He said, no, I can't give them to you. Mother Jasoda would be angry. So there was a big argument between the thief and Krishna. And finally, the thief became overwhelmed with transcendental happiness and became a devotee of Krishna. because we don't recommend these things. But sometimes it happens like that. Therefore, for that reason, we try to make arrangements so that people keep the association of those who are performing devotional service. So although we may not be so highly qualified in many ways, but because somehow or another we mention Krishna once in a while, because somehow or another we happen to do some service, therefore it's more beneficial than anything else that's available within this material world. Well, that's a break.
Break
from the material world, at least.
Now,
well, there's two parts of the Bhagavad Gita. One is knowledge of the self, and the other is knowledge of the Supreme Person. So, in the beginning, we may stress knowledge of the self, because most people are interested in their selves more than anything else. And in the beginning, we may stress detachment. We may become more interested in detachment rather than attachment to Krishna. Because basically, in the material world, people are a little fearful of their attachments. Just like one time, one lady wrote to Srila Prabhupada saying that she met some of his disciples in a parking lot. And they tried to sell her a book, and they seemed very negative, and they were all against things in the material world. They weren't very polite. Srila Prabhupada wrote back a letter and said, "Please forgive my disciples, because in the beginning of spiritual life, when one is not very mature, sometimes he rejects things, more or less out of fear, because he knows, at least by rejecting things, he won't become attached to them. Although rejection is another side of attachment. But in the immature stage of material life, one is generally influenced by aversion to the things that he was previously attached to, out of fear of becoming attached to them again. But after some development, one becomes more mature, and he becomes attached to the positive, then naturally his aversion and his attachment go away simultaneously." Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakti.